Sorry, man, it's your show. Great. I'm going to call the meeting to order. This is the October 7th meeting of Lasard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council. Thank you all for being here on time. First is to review and approve our agenda. Can I get a motion for approval of the agenda? Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Review and approve the minutes of our last couple meetings. This is in your packet. Can I get a motion to approve them? Any discussion? Corrections? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Any new conflicts of interest that have not already been disclosed regarding any business that we're doing today? Seeing none, the existing conflicts will stay on record. Executive Director's report.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I'd just like to welcome Mark on board. His first day was yesterday. You can ask him, but I think he's drinking from fire hose. And learning a lot about it. And the other thing I wanted to talk about was a Ducks Unlimited situation, which we hope you will hear about on the 13th of November. In their wild rice shoreline protection, they have acquisition authority for fee and easement. They did buy a fee parcel on a wild rice lake. I believe it's in Lake of St. Louis County. And it's on either side, it's U.S. Forest Service land. They want to convey the land they bought to the U.S. Forest Service, which is permissible with your permission. The statutes dealing with your permission require that the U.S. Forest Service, before the council hears the request for conveyance, acknowledge that they will uphold the intent of the acquisition, open to hunting and fishing and things of that sort. Right now, the Ducks Unlimited is working with the U.S. Forest Service in Minnesota and Washington to make sure that they will agree to do that. By the 13th, we hope you will have received a letter from the Forest Service and can, without discuss this without any issues. If it's not on the agenda on the 13th, it'll have to wait until later. This is different from the situation with Pheasants Forever and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and TNC and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, in that it's the appropriation law that DU acquired this land under does not direct the property to a third party. The PIP appropriations and the TNC appropriations say you'll buy land and move it into the waterfowl production area system or the refuge system or something like that. And that's not authorized in this particular law. So it requires your affirmative consent to transfer ownership. DU is interested in transferring ownership basically because they don't have a land management program in Minnesota. So that I wanted to give you a heads up on and say I hope we can discuss this particular. Are there any questions?
Bill, which year is the prohibition from?
10. Minnesota law is a 10.
Thank you for that. And so the conclusion of the 10 appropriations, that particular appropriation would be which date?
Well, it authorizes restore and enhance, and its month is June of 16. Excuse me, 50. Five.
Next.
Other questions? All right. I want to recognize that Amanda's new. She poked her head in at our last meeting, but welcome to you and welcome to Mark, who's, as you heard, drinking from a fire hose. He and I had dinner last night. I think he drank a little more. Not enough alcohol and way too much water. But welcome to both of you. we can help you if you're getting oriented, let us know. Glad to have you here. I want to pass out to you, you all got a letter from the City of Lake Park, an email, to which I responded, but because of the open meeting law, I couldn't respond and copy you. Therefore, I am now copying you with both their letter and my response to that. Since it also went through a number of legislators, I did copy them in my response. Just sort of FYI for everyone. If you disagree with me, that's fine. I tried to phrase it as coming from my perspective as a member versus on behalf of everyone. The other thing, I got an email today from Chris Larson, who wanted the council to know that they had recognized Bill at their meeting, landowner appreciation meeting on Saturday. And he asked me to pass out the press release and the picture from that event. They really wanted to thank Bill for his 40 years of service to natural resources in Minnesota. And I thought everybody should have a copy of that. So that's just going around for you. There's nothing else that anyone has. We'll move right into item number 5, which is the Nature Conservancy advance request. And you have information in your packet on this. We've heard somewhat about it at our last meeting and asked them to come back with a formal request. Neil, I think, going to come down and describe it or answer questions. This has to do with the Conservancy truing up their billing once their fringe rate has been determined at the end of the year and a timing disconnect. So, Neil, you want to describe it better than I?
I'll try. I'm Neil Deacon. I'm the Grassland Conservation Program Director for the Nature Conservancy based here in Minneapolis. And as David said, I was here at your last meeting describing this issue. It's a disconnect between how the Nature Conservancy calculates our fringe benefits rate versus how the DNR allocates our reimbursement for that. And just a quick description of the process. We work on an annual, a fiscal year basis on what we call provisional fringe rate basis. And what that is that's our best estimate of what we think our fringe benefits will cost in the coming fiscal year. The way that's determined is we look back at the previous year and we estimate based on our budget of how many dollars in salary, and then we establish our benefits rate. At the end of the fiscal year, we'll actually go back and we'll calculate what those actual fixed costs were, or what our fringe benefits rate actually cost us, say, for FY14. And that becomes our actual rate. What happens is we're operating going forward on our provisional rate. And in FY, just as an example, in FY13, our provisional estimated rate was 42%. When we got to the end of the year, we looked back and we found that our actual rates were 40.37%. So when we went and told DNR, we said, well, our fringe rates are a little bit less than what we estimated they were. We overcharged you $4,618. At that point, we worked out an arrangement to refund that money back to the state. And then DNR's auditors took a look at that and said, well, that constitutes, technically that constitutes an advance on behalf of the council to the Conservancy, and we need to come to the council and get approval for those kind of advances as we move forward. And so that's what we're requesting here today. I worked with DNR and the council staff, Heather and Bill, to draft the requested accomplishment plan amendment or advance request that you should have before you. And I guess I will stop there since I did go into some detail last time, and I'll take questions if you have them.
Okay.
Thanks, David. Neil, just for clarity, so if you would have hit the number right on the head, it wouldn't have been considered an advance. But it's only considered an advance because you weren't accurate in...
Correct, because we actually overcharged by $4,000. It was considered, that $4,000 was considered an advance.
Rick?
Janelle or Greg, so the reason for us doing this, is there a statutory prohibition or a statutory direction on only having reimbursement? Where are we at with
Mr. Chair, Rick, there's a statutory prohibition with a 16.841, I think, and it basically says that except for certain exceptions, but in your law every year, there's a provision that allows you to not withstand that. Basically, it has to be with the approval of the council. But it allows you, so in your law each year, you don't do it very much, you know, very limited situations like this, but it does allow that. So my understanding is we would not need to change the law to do this. It's just a matter of being approved by the council and being part of the accomplishment plan. Then it would be fine that way. And that's what this does.
So if we approve this, and when the particular projects or appropriations are closed out, in the final report, would there be documentation pursuant to the action taken on October 7th, 2014, this X amount was handled so that it's transparent in terms of what occurred with each of these appropriations?
Mr. Chair, the final report would show that the amount of money that was reimbursed to TNC, it would not show any balance that was owed back. We would have to change the format of the final report to get that information and make a special requirement.
I'll pass. Mr. Chair, just a point of clarification. The report would show the expended amount per line item. So in the personnel line item, bundled together would be salaries and fringe together. So we would know what was actually spent as opposed to what was budgeted, but that would be the appendix. As well as individual amounts of the position.
So I guess my question to y'all is, why wouldn't TNC just start with a rate of 38% and true up once they figure out is it 41, is it 40, is it 42? Why try to get it right knowing you're going to come into this advance situation, which is a pain in the rear for everybody, instead of underbilling and truing it up after the fact with actual numbers?
Our process for doing this, again, is not a Minnesota process. This comes out of our Arlington headquarters. And this is the process that we use for all of our federal grants, all of our state grants across the country. So we're talking about kind of an exceptional situation for the chapter within the internal workings of the Conservancy with this particular issue. Our accounting practices are to try to get it as close as we can. I mean, it's kind of a cash flow issue that we want to be as accurate as we can. 13 out of the last 15 years, we've actually underestimated our budget or our provisional fringe rate, and in which case we don't go back and try to recapture those costs from the granting agencies. It's only 2 out of the last 15 where we've actually overestimated. And like I said, in this case, it was for an amount of $4,600 on salaries of roughly $500,000. So it is very close. It's just not exact. It's a hard science.
All right. We want to approve it or not? Is there a motion? Okay.
I'd like to make a motion to approve the amendments to the accomplishment plan listed to incorporate the above provision in each accomplishment plan. For advance payment of salary-related fringe benefits is provided by TNC and DNR.
Okay. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you.
Next is a discussion of PILT. When we were in the process of bringing our bill to the legislature last year, there were several occasions where the issue of TILT was brought up. And whether or not our actions in buying land end up costing the state money through TILT in the long term that we're not somehow funding. There's no question that that's what we are doing. The question is, what do we do, if anything, about it? And we were asked to at least consider that. It's an incredibly complex issue, as I've gotten into it, figuring out what you can and can't do and who gets TILT and who doesn't get TILT and how you could handle this. I know, Heather, you've done some work on this. Can you help us understand the complexity of this issue?
Sure, no, I cannot. In the course of developing this agenda item, I did contact a number of individuals, the House and Senate staff, and they can certainly speak to their positions. I did also talk to the Minnesota Association of Counties, which has spent a large amount of time interested in the health issue, as well as other representatives and senators who have been involved and have talked about this. Ms. Taylor has done some preparatory work for members of the House on exploring possible options, and she can certainly speak to that. Greg, I would say the Senate didn't really have as much interest on the specific topic, but perhaps you can talk a little bit more about the specific scenarios that have been discussed in the last few
years. Great, Janelle, if you can help us understand the complexity.
Sure. Third chair members, I work on this issue quite a bit. I guess in the House there's been concern about additional land being purchased in terms of long-term costs for leaving the state, and you know there's been an interest to use Outdoor Heritage Fund to sort of offset some of those costs, and worked with a number of different members who put together a number of different scenarios, and all of them have sort of different pros and cons. I think at this point we've found one that really works just because of the complexity and the constitutional requirements of the fund. But some of the options we've put together sort of bill form and the sample just in PDF form have been to set aside money for long-term maintenance and restoration and easement monitoring, and that's sort of been semi-resolved as give various entities money. So that's sort of part of the concept, but we still have to, the long-term, in our land management costs, and the big one that we felt. I think most of the members on the council know this, and then each sort of advice letter that we put together, their thoughts on using the coverage, but for funds are probably not a constitutional use of funds. But again, there has been says it can't be, but I would say to think that the arguments for using folks are probably weak. But that's just my opinion. But we've put together, using different funds for that. We've also explored the idea of giving the counties money for PILT, but then requiring them to use that money to restore, protect, and enhance, but I don't think that gets anyone's where they want to be. And some have, been explored doing something like the federal payments, where you can give them a trust fund payment and you can set up their own trust fund and X percent of the money. But again, we're back to using the restore, protect, and enhance, unless you want to ask a constitutional question. So, we've put together various languages. I think the House at one point was carrying a couple years ago, President McNamara was a champion of that, but that was more of it didn't explicitly provide funding for itself, but I think there was maybe some intent behind it. And that was one option they had. And we've done quite a bit of work on it, but I don't think we've found sort of a happy answer. satisfy the county, satisfy, you know, the way we want to pass that bill, pass it, satisfy the people who are to do it. There's questions if anyone wants more details, but it's still sort of a theory case.
So I just wanted to bring it up because the legislature keeps talking about it. For us to not be aware that they're talking about it would be, we need to think about it at least. As you've heard, there are no good, easy solutions for how to do this or if we should do anything. But we've had direct requests to look at it. Jim?
Just out of curiosity, maybe Janelle can answer this, but $2 million a year seems just minor, a minor cost compared to the benefit they're going to be getting from, I'm talking about the state as a whole now, from the use of this land. I mean, I look at a bonding deal every year, and there's $20 million for flood prevention. Well, probably get more than $20 million of flood prevention from just our wetland acquisition every year. So I'm kind of still don't understand why this is such a thorn under people's saddle. And again, $2 million, they spill more than that before lunch. Why this is such a huge issue, I don't understand why people don't know.
But it keeps coming up because it's an unfunded mandate. And somebody wants someone else to pay for it. I mean, the perception is you're allocating money to purchase land, but you're not covering the long-term cost. You can agree or disagree with that, but that's why it comes up. Jane?
And I kind of share the frustration with continuing to discuss it when it really is outside of our purview to rule on this thing. We have an AG's opinion which suggests that it's unconstitutional. And for us to have anything more than that, I just don't know why we continue to harp on it. I agree it's an issue. I agree it's a sticky one for the counties, and every dollar is important. I understand all of that. But we're not going to solve it here. We're doing what we're supposed to do. And the attendant costs are the attendant costs, and the people who are supposed to be taking care of those things ought to be doing it. And I don't want to have to bring a lawsuit in order to solve it. That's the worst possible outcome. So somebody has to come up with a better idea, you know. And I really see us as the tail on the dog. I don't understand why this is in our lap. It's not our fault.
You know, I would like to just add what I think is some foundation when it comes to fill. You know, I looked through the report. We're adding $141,000 to $148,000 a year annually to fill based on our current rate of acquisition. And that seems to just be an insurmountable problem. And yet I look back at some of the things that have happened with pilt in Minnesota. I mean, we just closed on a Vermilion State Park, and part of that deal was double the pilt rate. Okay, nobody brings that up. Nobody talks about that. That's not problematic. When the Concon lands came back under state ownership, back when the ditch bonds failed and everybody was going under on that deal, part of the process was to, the state would take it over, and the legislative decision was made to double the pilt. And just last year, in the laws of 13, I think, there's lands that are called for their county tax forfeit lands that are now under the management of the state, and the pilt rate on those just got raised by 30% across the board. And so my question comes down to, and that's really the question that I would like to answer. We're looking at $141,000 a year, which appears to be a very serious issue to many. But why then are all of the other things that are being done legislatively that affect the amount of pilt that gets paid in the state, why are those not receiving the same type of scrutiny that our $141,000 a year do? And so when the questions are being asked, and those are only the ones that I'm familiar with, I don't know whether others exist or not. I'm assuming some do. But why is it what the Outdoor Heritage Fund does under this big giant microscope for $141,000 when all of these other changes and these manipulations to PILT are taking place, not under our microscope, and nobody, that doesn't appear to be problematic. And so if we can get it, I mean, at some point in time, if this decision, this discussion continues, which it appears it continues to will, because someone would be wonderful to answer that question for me and the council in general so that we can have a better understanding of why this pill is different and needs to be handled differently than all of the other pill obligations that are being encumbered, okay, not under our activity. So it isn't just, I don't think the discussion should just be our $141,000 a year. It needs to be a bigger discussion, and if all of a sudden doubling the pill on this or raising the pill rate on that by 30%, I have no idea how many acres that is. If all of a sudden that is not an issue, then these should fall under that, should get thrown in the same pile, in my opinion. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. I apologize for being late. I had 187th graders on the pulse floor. Well, to the members of the commission, I think, Ms. Taylor, thank you for your summation. The reality is there's a number of legislators that we serve with that absolutely feel that if land is bought with Lessard Sand and Cultural Heritage money, the dedicated sales tax, all the costs associated with that land should be paid from the purchase price. And I tend to agree with them. That's appropriate that if we're going to buy land with this dedicated money, we should pay all the costs. And I've done this analogy before. If you own a home in Hastings and you decide to move from the second ward where I live to the fourth ward, and your house is twice as big, it's now got twice as big a roof, twice as big an infrastructure to maintain. You don't expect your neighbors in the fourth ward to pay the cost for the additional roof to be taken care of and the additional heat bill to take care of. You build that into the idea that you can afford to move, and you move there accordingly. That's the basic argument. There's not been an attorney general's opinion. There's been a letter written. I believe that it would hold up the costs associated with buying the land are associated with buying land. Then we'd have an honest discussion. Do we want to buy $10 million worth of land, which is going to cost us $7 million to buy and $3 million to be put aside for long-term maintenance and build costs? To think that the kids' textbooks or the roads and bridges should pay for, instead of using the money for roads and bridges or kids' textbooks, it should pay the bill on Lessard Sam's land, I don't think is right. In reality, it's not a partisan issue. Representative Kahn, Representative Dill, and the both chair and influential committees in this area have both expressed an interest in dealing with this issue. And you've got people like Representative Draskowski or Representative Fabian that really think other people shouldn't pay our bills. That's the gist of it. You can argue, oh, it's only $140,000 a year, $4 million over the life, annual expense. $4 million will buy a lot of textbooks and patch a lot of potholes, and to think that we shouldn't be paying those bills ourselves. The way I bring it up is we're going to run into a wall one time, and they're going to say, no, you got $28 million worth of land purchases in this bill. We're not buying any of it. It's all zero. Go back to the drawing board and redo it. That's the risk we run by not recognizing this discussion. I think we have to get to the point where we see if anybody really wants to legally challenge it or not. If we do, I think there's going to be a strong movement in the next session to look and say we should do it for Lessard Sam's and for LCCMR. I just think it's right. If we're going to buy that land, let's pay for the cost of it. Then we'd have an honest discussion about it. Should we do easements, which can be very expensive, or do we recognize the real cost of buying land? You probably noticed in buying land, I probably put more to buy more land than anybody. I want to buy the land, but I got to be honest. We got to recognize the cost of buying land, and along with that goes selling some land in northern Minnesota. Commission Member Anderson's got too much public land in his district, and some of it should be sold and turned into nice cabin land or back to agriculture. We got some practices now where we can grow crops where we couldn't grow them before, and there's areas in Cooch King County and places like that we could put back in ag land if the state's own it. If you can't grow papillon, maybe we can grow some crops on it. So I think there's a lot of discussion to have, and I'm a big proponent of wanting to buy land to protect water and such, but this discussion is not going to go away. And if you think it'll go away by just keep buying land, all of a sudden we're going to end up with no land bought 1 year, and then we'll say, oh, they are serious. Thank you.
Okay.
But do you really think that that's for us to decide? I mean, it's a constitutional issue, right? That's the issue.
Well, Commission Member, Mr. Chair, Commission Member Kingston, you're absolutely right, but I think it's good for this body to be aware that there's two sides to the issue.
And you've expressed
Commission Member Cox
many times.
Makes a great point that it's only $150,000 a year. Suck it up. I mean, sorry, I'm paraphrasing. But, I mean, that's a legitimate side of the argument.
Yeah.
The other side is it's not right. I don't care if it's $150,000 a year or $4 million annually, which it will be at the end of 24 years.
Well, do you have a suggestion for us to do something today?
I hope we don't spend all the money that shows up in after the election. We're going to get, I think, a positive report, and I'm hopeful that we don't spend that money because I think it's something that the legislature may want to look at, and I think it'll have something we'll maybe get to do bipartisanly. I don't know if we need to affect the debate, my personal opinion.
Rick?
I think where it comes into this council's role is making recommendations on appropriation. And the issue, and it doesn't matter if Republicans were in control or the Democrats were in control, if you look at the last 6 years, this issue has been on every, that's why we put down the amount of built allocation in the appropriations, because we just know it's going to be asked. It doesn't matter where they're from or what their background is, the built question is going to be asked. And it's an issue for the townships and the counties. And particularly in northern Minnesota. I think I want to go back to something I've mentioned in the last couple meetings where the recommendations that passed into law this spring had a large number of passing. I mean, it was a very good number, pretty broad support. But the no votes were, and Denny could correct me if I'm wrong, the no votes are the no acquisition votes, pretty much. It's the no acquisition votes. So that is a component that's there in both parties that says no acquisition. And you can agree with it or disagree with it, but those are members that are representing their area, and they're significant.
Those are my guys. I know.
And
they're everywhere.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just... So I think where the piece comes in is we have tried, as Ms. Taylor mentioned, to deal a bit with it in maintenance costs, and we've made some of those changes in law, so we're building that in. The question is payment... I tend to disagree a bit with Representative McNamara, because I don't know if it is an appropriate use of the constitutional fund to pay taxes, in lieu of taxes, but I believe it could be used for maintenance, that the fund, if there's a dollars that go to the counties. I think the issue was hotter earlier in the life of the fund because we had LGA cuts that were going on during some of those times, and we were in budget cutbacks. So the counties and the local governments were more sensitized to the issue than perhaps they are now, but it's not, if we go back into budget cutting again, it's always going to be there. That's something to point out. So the struggle we've had trying to craft something is, you craft something where there's a maintenance or an obligation fund that goes to meet the constitutional terms, that goes to the counties to maintain that versus paying them in lieu of taxes to deal with their tax base. I mean, those are two different things, and that's why it hasn't been resolved, because we haven't found a way to frame that in terms of the law following the Constitution. I think if you asked 100 voters from 2008 who voted for it, do you believe this is going to be paying a county or a township in lieu taxes? No one ever considered that at all. But there's probably an expectation that it would continue to be used for servicing that acreage that's purchased. And how do you write that in terms of the resource management? That's the challenge we've been in. And it, like Representative McNamara said, the issue isn't going to go away. It's going to flare hotter and ebb and wane depending on the individuals and depending on if there's an incident where some county gets more or others. And Scott, those issues with Vermilion and that, I think that you actually, some of those were somewhat a reaction to what we were doing, where people who had power said, we're gonna double the pilt, or we're going to make sure that on this purchase, it's going to be there. So the ones that had the power were able to get those issues into law, and that's how that works. It's all part of the same mix.
You know, and I would just add one comment, Mr. Hanson, that whether there's $148,000 spent on pill here, which buys lots of school books, all of those other pill manipulations could buy lots of school books here.
Too. To clarify, a lot of that land was bought with general fund money. So it's using general fund money to pay the pill. You know, general fund money that bought that. Not all of it, but a lot of it was actually the same money that's paying the maintenance of the pill was the money used in the acquisition. So it would be a little bit different argument. Not in all cases, that's right.
I did some research of this at one time, but please refresh my memory on payment in lieu of taxes, pills, but what the exact definition of that is and what it is supposed to encompass, all the things it can and cannot encompass, because we're talking about it providing really taxes in lieu of property taxes, and we're also talking about it that maybe it could be thought of as a fund to maintain the property. What kind of parameters, word-wise, are in the definition of tilt that are present in there?
Greg, can you answer that? Because I certainly can.
Mr. Chair, Elizabeth, that's a big question. What I would recommend is that you read the report from a couple of years ago done by there was an auditor's report, and there was a report done by DNR. The DNR report did a wonderful job of kind of laying out the history of where all these things came from and what it's to be used for. And then there was a law change in 2013 to basically put in place this report. But basically what the state does is pay for, you make payments in lieu of taxes on natural resources. We don't pay for buildings, things like that. We don't pay for the state office building capital or any of those. It's only a natural resource thing. But they've all started back in the 50s with wildlife management areas, and then in 1978, the legislature recognized that there were other natural resource lands. And so actually two programs were at the same time. And so basically it's to pay counties for their loss of revenue for those state natural resource lands. And it also, especially with county tax forfeiture lines, it also provides an incentive, especially for those counties in the northern part of the state, to hang on to those tax forfeited lands. Remember, the tax forfeited lands, those lands is about forfeits. The township, the school district, the county all lost money. And so rather than selling them back, some of these lands were good for sell back to the private sector, so the counties maintain them. So the state pays, even though the land is owned by the state, managed by the county, but we pay tilt payments to those local units of government, basically the counties and townships. In some instances, the school districts. It's a very complicated law, but it's really just to reimburse them for their lost revenue due to those state natural resource lands being in that area.
Okay.
Greg, a question, just to clarify a statement. You said these are the state lands managed by the county in some cases?
Yes.
Does the county operate some of those lands as working forests, et cetera, where they could generate a revenue stream from those and we're still paying tilt on those acres?
Mr. Chair Scott, that's yes. In fact, most of the tax forfeited lands that we're paying tilt on are basically lands that are managed by northern counties as county boards. When you go through a county board in counties in northern Minnesota, you're basically driving through tax forfeited land. And it's a commissioner of revenue holds title and trust for the taxing district. And the counties manage those lands. They can sell them. They can run them as forests. I mean, there's a lot of options. Kind of, we do pay a tilt on that. That's it's $1.15 an acre that we pay every year on those lands. It was $1.28 prior to 2013. It was raised to $1.50. And then also on the
the other natural resource lands, like the tech school trust lands, we pay $1.50 in those. Now, so we used to pay just 64 cents, but in 2013, that was increased to $1.50.
One more question?
Yeah.
You know, if PILT is designed to replace lost revenue, why would we pay PILT on acres that don't have lost revenue?
Well, Mr. Chair, okay. I think the argument is, and I wasn't around in 78 when that was, I wasn't around here in 78 when that was established, that would make PILT payments. Part of it's an incentive for the county forestry, so that I think use a lot of that money to him. When you see people down here, like Joshua, the Gaston County, land commissioner or whatever, I mean, the counties that have enough of this land, they have land commissioners, and some of that money can go towards the purpose of managing. It's an incentive to manage the land. And I don't know that they get all of the money back when they manage this forest. You know, my understanding of forestry is it's not a very good money maker. In some situations, it can be, but compared to people building homes and things like that.
Thank you.
Would it be illegal or immoral to settle up at the end with school trust lands that were, you know, given as compensation? Would that, you know, is that a, I mean, that there are different pots, obviously, but, you know, without rattling the constitutional cage and yet having a recognition for them. You know, there are a lot of those parcels that are still sitting there. They've been for sale for quite some time, and they're not getting any buyers. One is right across the lake from where I live. I don't know. It's a resource. It's a natural resource. If it's not a moneymaker, you know, if they're making money on it or not making money on it, and there's a built obligation that goes along with these things, could you regionalize it somehow and square up later? Or at some certain, you know, period of time, like every 5 years or something like that, with the recognition that that's what it's addressing.
The school trust land comes with special designation that they are constitutionally required to generate money for the kids.
Right.
So you can't touch anything with them and commingle it and use it in other purposes. Sometimes there's exchanges and sales. It only can be sold by auction or exchange with only a, otherwise takes, trying to think. There's pretty limited things you can do with school trust land.
But there are exchanges.
Can be exchanged and it can be sold via auction. Is that right? I think that's it. It's the only way you get it. It's very, and it's constitutionally.
So I'm not talking about auction, they'd be talking about an exchange or something.
And we're looking at that as we work more and more. We're not really getting into legislative stuff.
Yeah.
I'm
going to stay away from that.
Not our purview.
That's right.
It's important that the council know this is an issue that keeps coming back and coming back and coming back. And I know it's frustrating to some people to hear it, but, you know, when I have to go present a bill, I hear, what are you going to do about PILT? You know, I think, you know, my take is that it really is probably not something we can tackle by ourselves. If the legislature wants to attempt to tackle it and give us direction, that's something different. But left to our own devices, it would be pretty hard if we wanted to take on this issue and find a constitutional way to handle it. But you need to just know that this will keep coming back and is a real irritant to some people that we haven't figured it out. So that's the purpose of the discussion today, nothing more. Anything else? So let's move into the real reason everyone showed up today, which is the allocation discussion. You have quite a bit of paper in front of you related to the discussion we're going to have. It shows our individual and collective wisdom in terms of allocation. I want to point out that Tom cannot be here today, and he did send a letter with some of his thoughts regarding the allocation and what he would encourage us to do and the things that were important to him. Just want everyone to take a moment and sure you review that before we go too far, so you're aware of his thoughts and can't be with us. There is, and staff can jump in anytime, but one of the things we talked about during the hearings were where were reports in terms of where were people spending money that had been allocated, how fast, where were reports. You have in front of you a final report status for past similar requests. So from organizations that are requesting money from us in this round, I asked staff to prepare a summary of where they're at in terms of submitting their final reports. Because I thought it was important for everyone to have information as to where that was at, and we can discuss that as we want. I did have Jane ask me and staff. I couldn't give her a great answer as to what draft meant in the final report status or due date.
Mr. Chair, draft is a situation where a program manager has entered and opened the final report in the system but has not completed it or submitted it for review and approval. So it means if they've touched the document,
okay. Jane, are you know the answer to that question?
So that's one step above due, past due.
Yes.
But nothing tangible.
There may be tangible items in the draft, but not tangible items.
I'm going to call it incomplete.
Right. There's an error in the back side of the sheet as well. In the Shallow Lake Wetland Program, which is the bottom set, the 2010 Accelerated Shallow Lake and Wetland Enhancement and Restoration is due 2015.
Both of them?
Just the top one.
Just the 2010?
Yes.
Okay. So, this is here. Yes, Elizabeth, I'm sorry.
This is... It's probably automatic, but I want to clarify. When it says draft, though, that is they opened the file, but that is also past due, right? Those would all be considered past due.
Mr. Chair, Councilwoman Wilkins, that is correct. So past due.
And I appreciate your communication here. Perhaps you were going to talk about the bottom paragraph on the agenda item memo and what the requirement is. Final report requirement must compile and submit all information from the projects and programs, including the proposed measurable outcomes. The statute also states that future eligibility for money from the Outdoor Heritage Fund is contingent upon satisfying all applicable requirements in this section. So what does that mean as we move forward?
That's why you're getting information. There is no firm guideline as to what that means and how much flexibility we have or don't have, but we've been told to hold people accountable. And so how we want to do that is an open question. But it's one where having the information allows us to do it, not having the information doesn't. So that's why you have the information. Did you want me to make a decision for you? What question?
I think this is really something that the legislature needs to tackle, maybe wants to tackle, as far as the definition of what being held accountable is. But I think probably if we do approve money to NGOs and agencies that have outstanding reports do. I think they have a few months before the legislature meets, at which time they could definitely have the reports in, so that if we approve money, it could potentially be contingent. That would be my feeling. Contingent that those reports be completed before the legislature makes any decisions on our recommendations.
I think that's an option. Certainly, as we approve a bill in draft form with accomplishment plans in December, it could be contingent on having final status report. We could also put in our criteria for our request for proposal next year that we won't have a hearing for anybody who's past due. There are many options here, and you know, I would say, because this is something we haven't done before, this will come as a surprise to some of the people who have their names here. And probably having some grace period is better than being too harsh. But I think we need to send a message that this is part of the game, and if you want to apply for more money, you have to play by the rules. The question is how we do that. Heather?
Mr. Chair, I just remind the council, too, that there was an OLN finding in another fund where funds had been awarded to agencies that had not submitted final reports, and that was a finding in that OLN investigation. So it has been recognized that people should not.
Okay. Rick?
I think it would be good before we do the final approval, which is due January 15th. Whatever happens today, that there's in writing to the grant recipients informing them of their status, and that there must be a report by the time by the meeting where we do the vote. I'm fully prepared to remove appropriations from groups that don't meet a requirement in statute.
Mr. Chair, I would like to add, too, that there has been continual conversation with all of the recipients as to when reports are due, and there's at least a 2 to 3 year, well, 2 year trail of documentation for especially for 2009. So people have been reminded, they've been given deadlines, they don't adhere to them, they come back and they keep getting money. So I think the message is one of mixed communication. On one hand, they are required to do this, on the other hand, there's no consequence. So we keep giving people deadlines, I think, but there needs to be a consequence.
And I would say it's problematic for us to do that January 7th because we have to rewrite the bill that day. You know, it might be better to say in December when we're getting together for, you know, sort of the almost final. We've heard the accomplishment plans. We still have a little reactionary time because the only solution we have January 7th is to nix something and not spend the money.
That was exactly what I was going to say. I think it should be earlier than that deadline. And so I, you know, I'm just kind of thinking out loud, I'd like to see a deadline, hard, fast deadline in December, like a week before our next meeting, so that they could be compiled or however long the staff would like to see it, so that they could have it in report form for the meeting and add it to our criteria for next round, that if you're not current, that you're disqualified. It's a basic criteria.
Heather?
Mr. Chair, I just want members to understand, too, that the reports as they come in take a great deal of time to review and approve, so it could not be turned around in a week or 2 to 3 weeks. It's a formidable task to go through all of these land reporting forms, making sure all the attachments are included, that all the notice of funding restrictions are attached. So a short period of time like that's not going to be workable.
How much time would be workable?
For this many reports? I don't have any idea, but it wouldn't be a week, and it wouldn't be 2 weeks.
So, I'm just, if we said they had to be in by the 13th of November?
If there's a draft bill that's due in December for the council review, and there's a major holiday in November, it's not, I don't see how that's workable. And I'm going to be gone for 2 days, so... And I'm not taking work.
There's one other option we could consider, too. We don't approve the accomplishment plans until June. So if we said, look, everybody who's getting money on this round, we're not going to approve your accomplishment plan. We're not going to change the bill, but we won't approve the accomplishment plan in June unless you're completely caught up, and that's it. You're giving them 7 months' notice to get their stuff together, and we've got another bite at the apple.
Mr. Chair, the important thing is that accomplishment plan approval, they can't spend a dime.
So, comment?
Well, I'm wondering if that is going to be a bit of a problem if we wait that long. It sounds like, and from my previous conversations with staff, the staff have gone way overboard in giving people ample notice, 1 year, 2 years. There's just no reason that these aren't done. So I think we should take action, certainly by, I do believe we need to take action at the meeting when we do the review the bill. But I think probably it needs to be more final and not wait until when it's an accomplishment plan, because then we've already allocated the money. Other people, it'll be another year before we can get that money into working, doing some good. So I think in all fairness to all the other people who have submitted all their reports and who have been following all the rules, that that money be freed up for them. And so I believe it's not a good idea to wait for the accomplishment plans. I think the decision should be made prior to that. And maybe what we need to do is just that letter that Rick indicated, send out as soon as possible and say we'll be making decisions at the December meetings. And you need to be caught up.
What we've heard is staff can't review it by
But if I could just jump in there, I would like to see all these due and drafts at least changed to submitted by then. They should all be submitted. They may not be reviewed. They won't be reviewed. But they should all be submitted by then for us to continue to consider it.
I think that's a stepped way of dealing with it. By December, submitted by January. Then it's in our court to approve it. Now, if there's major flaws or pieces missing, then you're at least submitted. I think the issue here, giving them the time to do it, I understand the staff time, but if you say they must be submitted by a certain time, by December, that puts it in their court. And, you know, the reality is if this isn't, if there's not consequence from the council, there'll be consequence on the floor.
Do you need a motion of some kind? What do we need to do?
I think a motion would be a good thing. I've just been writing a three-part motion to try to capture what everybody's saying, but if you have you want to hear what my thought is?
Most certainly.
The motion would be that all plans have to be submitted by the 1st of December. If they're not submitted, we'll take it out of the bill. If there's a future recommendation. And the second piece is that all accomplishment plans, or that we will not approve an accomplishment plan until the submitted final report is approved. So if there's some back and forth, you know, it's not going to go on forever. Our next step of real authority is the accomplishment plan. And the third is that our RFP indicate that in the future, we won't hear a request that does not have, from a past recipient, that does not have a submitted final report on a timely basis.
One question on that. In the target list, DNR shows up on one, I think, maybe two. but they don't show up on their other ones. So what do we do with people, groups that are in multiple entities? We knock them out completely or just say we're not going to go do this one that you're tardy on?
Peer pressure would be a good thing. I mean, it's just a thought. This is my thought trying to capture the discussion. Scott, do you have a better thought?
No, I concur with that, but that accomplishment plan is submitted by all three entities, is it not? I mean, if there are three people working together, I mean, they would work together to submit those final reports?
Her question was the final. DNR, one branch of the DNR not submitting their report would disqualify then all of the DNR.
Yeah, right, yes.
That was your
yes.
concern. So if the partner's grant doesn't submit the report, no other DNR could put a request in.
Then when we answer that question, we also need to take a look at, like, these organizations were the Trust for Public Lands and you know, these other River Ring and all those, they group together and they have a report. Do they all three then get, I mean, do all three organizations get bumped when one accomplishment plan on one project is not complete? That, I mean, so it's not just the DNR question. It could be anybody that's teaming with other members. You does it. Lots of different entities have more than one person. I think you would, if you want your reports in on time, you just tell them that none of them are eligible if their reports are not submitted on time.
Like I said, peer pressure would be a good thing. Jane?
Well, that wouldn't be my intent. My intent would be similar requests, limited to the similar requests.
The floor is open for a motion. So.
Before you get to the motion, looking more closely at DNR as an example, if we knocked out the DNR completely because the WMA and SNA acquisition piece is tardy, then we also knocked out our CPL grants and our contract management and restoration evaluations because those are also with the DNR. So we need to be cautious about giving a blanket no because of the impact that it could have on something that we don't want to do.
I would make the three-part motion that the chair made with the clarification that it is the individual project that is removed, not the entire organization that is removed.
Similar programmatic.
It would be whatever program is tardy on the report,
right.
That's the one that is removed.
That's right.
Staff work on the exact language and clean it up. Staff is indicating they will. Any other discussion? Rick?
Connected on program, I think that's important because if it was the individual or the manager, you could just have them change the name first. So it has to be the program. And clearly we have appropriations that are phase 6, phase 7. So I would assume the intent of the motion is, particularly those phases, that those are program ones that you're looking at, that would be null if they haven't provided in the future.
Programs would be included in projects if the reports are targeted.
Okay. Everyone all right with this? Everyone understand the motion? Any more discussion?
Can we add that to procedures, to our procedures? Or does it have to? Do it have to do with any other discussion to make it an ongoing thing, not just for what we got looking at today?
I think the key ongoing one is the third part.
There
will be no hearing for someone who hasn't submitted the final report.
Just want to be sure we don't have to come back to it again.
That will be part of our RFP process. And I'll bet we'll get this fixed pretty quickly.
Yeah.
All in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Opposed? Great. Motion carries. Thank you to staff for bringing up the issue and making us all aware of it and giving us a path to do something about it. There's also in your packet a something called a RADA.
I'm
not sure what a RADA means.
It's an error.
Error. All right. There was an error. The grant request, I believe, for WAO2 Shallow Lake Wetlands Protection Program Phase 4 originally was $3,000,000, $530,000 and is now $3,468,000. Is that correct, Bill?
Not quite. what's incorrect is the expenditure balance remaining prior laws of 13 approval of the shallow lake and wetland program. And you can find that in the sheet by WA2, which is about three quarters of the way down the sheet. It's a Ducks Unlimited project. And if you go out to the pair of columns that are labeled Minnesota Laws of 13, Fiscal Year 14, which is the last, and I said right there, sets of three columns. The $1,550,000 should be $3,500,000. And the 44% should be 2% balance remaining. So the upshot of what we're correcting here is the original data showed they had 44% of that appropriation remaining. We've come to find that the accurate number is 2%.
Okay. Does everyone understand that? Thank you for helping me understand what was in front of me. What does errata mean?
Error. It's just Latin, so you don't have to admit it.
Jim?
Yeah, can I just go back one step to the reporting process? And I'd just like to ask staff, these people that have been negligent in the reports, have they been turning in their biannual reports as far as how far they've proceeded every year? I mean, have they been turning in their twice-a-year progress reports?
Yeah, all the status reports that were due August are the only about four that are outstanding right now.
Thank you.
All right. So, the next thing in front of you is the chair's proposal. As you know, we've had our hearings. First, we reviewed everything. We decided which we would call in for a hearing. We did the hearings. We then all individually ranked the projects and allocated the estimated $100 million. And what you have in front of you is a cumulative total of what those allocations look like. This shouldn't be a surprise to anyone. We've done this in the past. And the real question becomes for us, how do we want to handle the allocation? Last year we had an interesting discussion which led us to a point of saying, you know, let's take a percentage of everybody who had so many votes and above, and what the total would be on average, allocate a percent of that, leave a percent off the table, and then individually allocate that balance remaining. We did the same when there was extra money that was the result of the December forecast, which I actually thought worked pretty well. But that's just me as your chair thinking it worked well. We as a group have to decide it works well and come up with a strategy. The chair's proposal, which is in front of you, is based on the fact that we really had a lot our collective thinking was pretty close. If you look at this, there were, and the cutoff for me was those that received nine or more votes to allocate specific amounts of money. The average of that on a cumulative basis would be $91 million of the $100 million that we have. If you just take those nine and above, which goes down to about PA 11. And then if you took 90% of that cumulative number, or that average number, it would leave us, we thought it would leave us with $1.4 million for each member to allocate. Because we knew Tom Saxhog was not going to be here, we had on the sheet that there were 11 members voting, but now there are 10 because Bill Ingebrigtsen cannot make it today for a reason I don't know about. So there are 10, not 11. So the total would be $1,624,000 for each member to allocate if you like that scheme, which we used last year. And that would be my proposal, and I would open it up for discussion.
I would concur with the chair's proposal. I mean, there'll be some more discussion, but if we opt to go with that chair's proposal, do we need a motion to that effect?
A motion to that effect would be wonderful.
So, but we can still discuss after the vote is done.
Absolutely.
I would make a motion to forward the chair's proposal at 90% of all of the recipients that received allocations from 9 members or more.
And that the remaining would be allocated by each of us recommending for consideration by the rest of the members $1,624,000.
Correct.
That's the main motion. Discussion.
I would support the motion. I think that looking at the allegations, there is quite a bit of agreement and there's quite a bit of balance. And I know that there may have been some recipients last year who didn't like the proposal, but if you really look at this, each member is making 1.5% recommendation, and it's like 1% of a recommendation of it. Then the council has to vote on it. I don't think that's a broad, you know, it's not a great deviation. We've heard the proposals. So I'm comfortable with this and moving forward. I would just ask Scott if he was, you know, last one, I think we did it by lot in terms of the order, if that was the intent as well, just to go around.
I had a thought on that.
Yes?
My thought was to ask everyone to go around the room and pick a number from 1 to 10. I've already written a number on the back of my agenda, and whoever would get that number would go first, and we would go clockwise from that person rather than drawing lots. Just a way to do it. But we could do it any way our collective parties desire.
I concur with the chair's intent.
All right. Any other thoughts? Danny?
I have a couple of questions. There's a few projects in the chair's proposal. First, I have one question on the restoration evaluations support line in the chair's proposal. I think the 90% column says $100,000. I'm just wondering if staff could say, is that actually an error? Should that be like $87,000?
Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, the $90,000 is the rounded down figure, but the statute requires no less than 0.1% be appropriated to this program. So staff added in the extra $10,000 to comply with statute.
And was contract administration, which went from 135 to 130, also rounded somewhat? That seems like it's not 90%. I'm sorry, it is. Forget I said anything.
Yes. Mr. Chair, so I want to remind members there are two items that are not depicted on the spreadsheet. One is for the appropriation to LCC for the administrative process of the council. That's $1.5 million. And also a request from the LCC to fund the funds share of the legacy website, which is $16,000. So we'll need to include those items in the final tally.
You know, one comment that I would like to make is as we go around and members are going to take their $1,624,000. You know, in the past we've had some, and anyone obviously can do whatever they want, but, you know, some members went off the list into programs that had almost no support whatsoever. Those recommendations flounder almost, not virtually every time that they've been tried. So when you make an appropriation recommendation with your share, you know, to me it would seem reasonable that would be something that received a substantial amount of council support already, not something that's either not listed here or has little to no support of the members. That would almost make sense to me. I'm just laying that out there. I think that's a recommendation when each person makes their own pick.
So, just a clarification on the administrative budget. We actually did drop in $1.2 million of the $1.5
million. I'm sorry, I remember the $1.5 million.
But it's really $1.2 million. So the administrative budget is in there, which would also cover the $15,000 for LCC. No. So, if your motion, if you'd allow me to have Amanda change the administrative budget and add $15,000 to that to cover the required $15,000 to the LCC for the website.
Friendly amendment accepted.
Good luck, Amanda.
I just have a couple more housekeeping questions. One, how are we dealing with the two senators that are not here, so they don't have a voice today if we do this $1.6 million?
As we did last year, and as our rules call for, there is no absentee voting, with the exception of election of officers. So they, by not being here, don't get to vote. I know Tom is aware of that because he called me, and that's why we have the letter from him. He's hoping that other people will notice what was important to him and ask us to consider it. I don't know why Bill isn't here, so I am not aware of that. I will tell you that at the end of the day, we have to have 9 votes to move this forward. It is not a supermajority of those present, it's a supermajority of the entire council. So we have to have 9 votes to pass this out. So we're going to have to do it without them, is the answer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then additional follow-up. I'm not real fond of the $1.6 million of each of us doing. And so I'm not going to support that part of the effort. I mean, if it comes down to it, I'm going to do my part in the process that I can support. I think that a further discussion probably a better than last month than to allocate it that way. So I just want to say that's my own personal feeling on that. I do have a few projects. How are we going to deal with that? I think I have a question mark on about 5 that I'm not sure they work with the partial funding. I think historically staff has worked on that after this meeting to see if that is an issue, and then we would adjust if a need arises, or is there some here that we know now don't work at the partial funding level? Because some of this partial funding is down at 60-70% of the request. Other ones are, I mean, some are less than that. Some are 40-50% of requested funds. Some are specific acquisitions that may not work. Are we going to discuss that at all?
I believe that there are 2 steps to the discussion there, or maybe 3. There is, first of all, nothing to prohibit before we're done us from saying someone's been allocated on the average $5 million, but I really think this is more important. We should cut that back to $4 million and add that million to someplace else. The motions that can take place from this point on are both to add, assuming that we go forward with Scott's motion, is to add the 1.6 each of us has to individually recommend to the rest of the council, or for any of us to then make a motion to change one of the amounts that's here. Because we can't prohibit each other from doing that, in essence. So I think that there are those opportunities to then get into a discussion, and I would hope we would have a discussion about if project, you know, XYZ can't happen with 40% of the funding, why are we giving it 40%? Are we going to bring it up to a higher level, or are we going to kill it altogether? We should be having those discussions.
Two things. One, if somebody can't get by with 40% of their funding, they should have said so in their request. I don't think it's our job to second guess the documents they have before us. Secondly, last year we specifically agreed to not take away funds from other ones, because otherwise you've got a free-for-all. You'd be like, well, I really don't like this, so I'm going to take away $8 million from it. I don't think that's going to get us anywhere. I think we're better off to start with the chair's proposal of the 90% of the average of 9 votes and up, and only add and not subtract, because we'll be here all day if we subtract.
I'm not saying I disagree. I'm saying we have the option, because we haven't set a rule that we can't do that. So I'm only telling you what our options are going forward. We want to collectively decide you can't take away, that's fine.
Can I amend my motion?
You can.
I would like to amend my add on to my motion that once each member has allocated their $1.624 million, that no additional changes to the appropriations be made as far as subtracting this or adding that.
Okay.
I'm saying, once the million six is, once the balance has been expended, that motion ceases. We can't go back and say, take $5 million from there and put it over here, because as Sue said, that could last for 4 days. Okay. I mean, everybody, we've got consensus. We have an allocation. We have $16 million left. We can run that through. And I think that at the end of the day, we'll be able to get the 9 votes out of the 10 members to pass that.
Scott, I think it was you who recommended that we look at these projects, and some of them needed to be funded in its entirety. We should do that. I think with this 90% allocation, what we've told everybody is go ahead and build the four walls of your house, but we're not going to let you build the roof. Some of these, of course, don't apply to that. I don't know how the Bemidji folks are going to just do a little bit of the bottom of Lake Bemidji or a little bit of the shoreline. So I don't quite understand what we're trying to accomplish outside of making life real simple for us.
Well, and at the end of the day, Ron, when all 10 members that are present have made their allocation, the problem of which you speak may not exist. Okay, we could take a look at that at the end of the day, but certain projects have more support. I mean, if a member makes a passionate plea for a project and says, I'm going to give all 1/6 because I want him to finish it, maybe another member would then step in and add his allocation to do that. Okay? And I think that has a likelihood of happening.
I think where the confusion might be, and this is more of a clarification, when you said subtract or add, and when you're saying add, meaning one person could add and another person could add until it reaches their original request.
Correct.
You can't go over their original request.
Correct.
So you can add cumulative addition.
Correct.
But you don't give somebody any more than they request.
Correct.
So, and just a clarification, Bill was kind enough. Everybody who we recommend funding for today comes back with an accomplishment plan in November, and if there isn't enough money to do the work, they have the option to, at that time, say, I can't do it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I'm wondering, there's been a couple of projects that have brought additional information forward since we made our allocations. One, I think when it was presented, there was a question about the overhead. I think it was the buffer project. And I noticed there's a few people that have comments on it. It's a really good project that matches Clearwater and LaSard Sam's money. But I think it may not have gotten as many votes from all the members as it would have if the clarification was known at the time. And if I'm not mistaken, there might be one, two, or three projects that staff has sent us additional information on to clarify. I wonder if it would be appropriate for us to know that and have a discussion about those projects. Should they be part of that $16 million? Does the group think we should deal with that? I think there's some, one of them was some mistakes, I think, or some additional information that might be appropriate for us to have.
Okay. So when we had the hearings, when there was a request for additional information, we encouraged people to get it to us quickly so we could have that before we took our allocations into consideration, I believe. Now, some didn't do that as quickly as others. And I guess the question that I'd like to ask you is, what do you want us, what are you specifically asking us to do?
Well, specifically the one I remember is the buffer project, which truthfully is the largest funded, average funded project below the line we're drawing right now. It had $3 million of recommended balance funding. You know, if you take the 37 and divide it by the 18, well, I recommended it. I think if you look at the additional information that was sent to us by Bowser, it may clarify some. I think I had, if I remember right, and I apologize, I don't have my original folder with, but I think I mentioned that I think there's something wrong in their overhead that they need to work on it, and I thought a couple of people had that. No, Mr. Chair, it's PA07. Need more control on long-term management or don't do this, and there's some other ones, staff easement, but I think Bowser got back. Actually, there's three different people that had comments, including you, Mr. Chair, about the staff cost. I think it was HR prodding that originally came, and I think a clarification came on that. And wouldn't it make sense for us to know that? And at some point, I'd like to have the discussion. I think they should be in the base myself.
Ron?
Well, I was going to speak to that, too. I'm a little perplexed that this project that has great statewide importance is not even going to make the cut of the buffer program. I'd be curious to hear some of my fellow council members who, because the range of recommendations went from 12 million by one member to zero to four others or more. And that's that strikes me as something that I don't think I've ever seen before.
Again, I think we could probably be here for 4 days if we get into the let's redo what we're supposed to have done by September 22nd. Everybody here has 1.6 that they can throw in on a fund. If everybody wanted to spend their 1.6 on the buffers, they'd have 16 million. If there's an opportunity to add money to a project that didn't get funded, there's nothing saying you can't add it to one that's below the line at this point. But if we try to reopen, whether or not people want to change their mind for information that came in after the September 22nd deadline, people had the deadline. Everybody knew what the deadline was. The public knew what the deadline was. The grant requesters knew what the deadline was. If they didn't provide their information in time for someone to change their allocation and resubmit to staff, then it's just simply too late. Just my opinion.
So staff has just informed me that the information from all requesters was forwarded to all of us before our voting was due. So everybody had the information before you got your final votes in or the deadline was for. Whether or not that's how you did it, that is what happened. And I would tend to agree with Sue. If any of us feel that some project is short pain, we can add to it, and collectively we can add to it, and we should have an open discussion about why you feel passionate. We ought to include that, and you can recommend that then. That would be how I would recommend we proceed, but that's just how I would recommend it. It's the group's decision how we proceed.
So do we need a review of the motion that's on the table?
Does everyone understand the motion that's on the table?
I do not.
You do not. Can we review the motion? sure. Bill, can you review the motion that's on the table?
The motion is to begin with the chair's proposal, which is 90% of the average of those receiving 9 and above, and to allocate the remainder on a per capita basis to the present council members.
And that we will not remove money from those. We won't.
And that motion will cease when the $16 million has been spent.
And yet we will not remove money from the 90% allocations, and that motion cease when the 10 present members have allocated by motion or amendment their $1.6 million.
I don't think we can do that. I mean, you can't say we're not going to do that motion. That would be inappropriate. I mean, I don't know. You can't stop somebody until you adjourn the meeting. You can't stop somebody from doing a motion. You may not have voted in, but you can't to say we're not going to do any answers at that point.
So, Scott, will you accept the suggestion that we remove that and we have a gentleman's agreement, but that gentleman and gentleman's agreement that we won't do that, but we can't prohibit it?
Agreed.
Okay.
Well, Mr. Chair, unfortunately, two of the members that supported that buffer project are here, two senators, but I would want to amend Scott's motion and include $3 million, reduce the remaining balance from 16 240 to 13 240, and put $3 million into the buffer based on the additional information we got. I just think that we should have that discussion. And I don't know when you want to have it, but I thought it was appropriate to have it before we divide it up. I realize Jane's saying, but I think that information came after. We didn't have the answers about that staff that I remember, the allocation, and I thought it got sent to us after we met.
So I have an amendment to the motion. Is that what you're doing?
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess, unless I'm remembering it wrong, I thought that Belzer's staff got information to us after our meeting that there was a mistake in it.
So I'm looking it up at this moment. I received, along with staff, a note on 9/17. Our last meeting was 9/11. So a week, 6 days later, I received an email saying that they had made the correction to the staff. And Bill sent out that to all members the same day in an email to all members. Bowser found an error in their personnel calculations, reduced their request for buffer. So we got that 9/17. Whether or not we want to revisit that is fine, because that's when we did get it. Rick?
Was that an amendment?
So do you want to make a motion for an amendment?
Well, Mr. Chair, I'd like to. I realize, like I say, two of the people that felt strong about the project aren't here, but I think it deserves, eight members to fund it, and that was based on, I think in my case, I assumed that they were going to fix it, which they did come back 6 days later. Maybe the people that zeroed it out would have zeroed it out even if it didn't have, but I think the comments were the overhead. I remember the reaction of the testifier, something was wrong. And I assumed they were going to come back and fix it, which they did do. So I guess that's the reason I'm bringing it up now, is I think it's a good project, that if it had been properly, not had the mistake in the overhead, it would have had at least the one additional vote that would have put it over the top.
I gave it a zero, and I'm still giving it a zero. And the reason why is because in the last 2 years of appropriations, they have 86% from 2 years ago and 100% unspent allocations. And that's why I gave them a zero, and I don't think I'm the only one. If you're not going to spend your money, I'm not going to give you any more. I'm going to let you catch up. So just saying two people are here that supported it, too bad. They're gone. We know why for one, we don't for the other, but I gave them a zero for good reason, and it wasn't anything to do with their personnel allocations.
So I just want to clarify, are you making a motion for an amendment to Scott's motion, or are you asking us to discuss it?
No, Mr. Chair, I do want to make an amendment, but and I know that there's, you know, however many projects, 46 projects or whatever it is, but, and if we discuss every one of them, I respect the opinion that I understand that once we start doing it. But this one, I think, has got some extenuating circumstances, and specifically, I don't think the backlog, that's different than the information that was sent to us after the fact. It's my understanding they're ready to spend this money right away, and maybe I'm missing that. It's not my recollection that that money can go out the door right away.
Looking at the sheet that says it's still unspent, and that's what I went by. And yeah, they sent a letter to everybody a couple of days ago by email directly to the counselors, and that's what you're thinking came in as late money or late information, but that's not what they told us in the hearing. They said, yeah, no, that we've got a backlog, and this is why. I'm not going to change my zero simply because it's a good program. It is a good program, but I think we need to catch up.
Heather, do you have any other information on this? On the backlog, any part of it, anything staff can add? I asked you because Cole wasn't sitting next to me, and I didn't think Mark would want to answer.
I think Sarah Sterlman and Bill Penny are going to come down and can certainly speak to the issue.
Okay, let's get a clarification on this. Rick?
Well, as they're coming down, and I think this is an important discussion to have, I'm prepared to, whenever it comes to my allocation, to be supportive of good projects, and I was the one who gave it $12 million. And on the content side of it, I think that, at the last meeting I handed out to counselors the USGS study about neonicotinoid pesticides being found in water. And so there are rare projects where you deal with both fish habitat and upland or other wildlife habitat. I think we, again, could maybe get to the same solution here if we go through the process, but I hope that we have this discussion because maybe people can be encouraged to allocate their 1.6 to the buffers program. Because I think there's some confusion about it, and I think the piece where there may be a difference is you could have the districts spending the money and the delay being if those are getting the money, getting the explanation to the council. And working with the districts, there are some districts that are highly functional and some that are less so. I would hate to penalize the highly functional districts. That's my comment.
So, introduce yourselves and go ahead and answer the question.
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you. Sarah Stroman, Acting Deputy Director with the Board of Water and Soil Resources. So I think just by way of explanation, one of the challenges with conservation easements is there's a lag time between the time when the funding is allocated to a specific project from when we do a sign-up, we accept the number of allocations, the dollars are allocated, and the time it takes to close the easement. The money is not actually expended until we can cut a check to a landowner and pay them for that easement. In between that time when we allocate and when we spend, we have to do title checks, we have to map properties. There's a number of things that have to be done, but those dollars are spoken for. It just means the check hasn't gone out the door. So if you look at the information that was provided to the council specifically, I think what you will see is steady progress towards expenditures. The 2011, there's 25% remaining, 2012, 86, and then 100% is still showing. There simply has not been enough time to close those easements. But I think, as Mr. Henning has testified before, and Mr. Hope in the testimony. The last sign-up we did for the most recent funding we received on July 1 of this year, we did a sign-up this summer, and we were only able to fund 10% of the applications. The money is all allocated to projects. It will now just take some time to do the processing for those, and then we'll send the money at the end of the process.
Can we just take a vote? If I could add, and then briefly, Bill, thank you for the sign-up that Sarah is referring to, the 30-day sign-up, the last month of June, for the money that arrived on July 1st, by July 15th, all the money was allocated. And that included our Clean Water Fund money, as well as the OHF dollars. And the ask that we had in the sign-up, there was approximately $37 million in requests that we needed. Have us $6 million to spend. We were able to fund about 10%. It was a lot of disappointment for a lot of things.
As Bill knows, my comment to that is remains. But any other questions for Bowser? Bill and Sarah, thank you.
Thank you.
So do we have an amendment or not?
Mr. Chair, I have moved to amend that instead of $16.24 million remaining, that it would be $13.24, I think $3 million, moved to Project PA07.
Okay, everyone clear on the motion? Any discussion?
We're voting only on the amendment now?
Only on the amendment.
Okay.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
No.
No. Those have it. Amendment fails. So we have the motion on the table. Is there any other discussion on the motion on the table? All in favor of the motion as stated by Bill, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carries. So, as I said, for how we figure out who goes first and second and third, I have on the bottom of my sheet of paper a number between 1 and 10. It might be 1, it might be 10, it might be 7. You never know. And I'll start, Jane, with you. Just pick a number between 1 and 10. You can only, once you pick the number, nobody else can pick it. And whoever picks that number goes first, and we go clockwise from there.
My number is 9.
3.
4. I know what the number is, so I'm not going to say that. Jim?
8.
10.
1.
6.
2.
The number is 5.
Was it 5? Five.
All right, you can go first.
Okay, the first thing, the contract management is 20,000 short of the 150 they need, so I'll throw 20,000 into that and fill it up. I don't think anybody will argue with me on that one. Let's see. I would also like to fill up number FA02, Protecting Forests, Wildlife Habitat, and Wild Rice River Watershed Wider Creation, which, according to my calculations, is 1,038,000 short. That would fill them up to their original request.
This is FA
103-8400. That's FA02.
Yep.
566 left. I will put all 566 on. It's like a game show. I will put it in HRE 06, Shell Rock River Watershed District. So 566 to HRE 06.
Point of clarification, Chair, is it 1622
500? I thought it was 1624.
It's 24.
I thought that there was a subtraction rate.
No. Well, for the 15,000, you're right. Bob is correct.
What's our number?
Because we added the 15,000 for the web page in addition to the management?
I believe it's 1622 500.
And that one says 1516.
That's because of the numbers that have just been added.
No, the math there in the blue says 1516 after that 1215 was added.
That figure is a function of the amount spent. And we have your amendment in the sheet now. So the number that we started with,
look at the number in blue, Sam.
The 1,516 is what each member gets to decide on, because we took up the 15,000 for the web page, so brought it down.
Okay.
So everybody gets
1,516.
That doesn't make sense.
1609. Scott, while we're calculating here and working on our figures.
A clarification, because last year when we did this, if the member put forth their proposal in total, or somebody could ask for separation or whatever it was,
division
to vote on all three of those individually. Does the person making the request say it's all or none, or is it up to the rest of us to ask for that division and to vote on each of those individually?
I believe it is up to the, you can ask for division of her motion, and then it would be taken as three separate motions.
In the order prescribed by the person making the amendment.
No. Yes. Mr. Chair, just to clarify, every member always has the right to a division as long as it's divisible. And the person making the motion does get to decide, as Mr. Becker said, what the order is. So if someone puts up three things, you can divide out. You can do two and one. You can do them all separate, as long as it's divisible. And then the person who makes the motion gets to decide which one they want to offer first if another member has asked for division.
Okay.
Okay, clear now? Yep. I'd ask for division on that one.
Okay, well, let's get our numbers accurate here.
It could be 1609 because 15 would be taken off of every single person.
Right. I'm going to give us a couple minutes to resolve the math here.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, one more question.
Yep.
If in this process a member wants to make a, which I've done in the past, for example, on the DNR Aquatics program, we said that I made a motion to that could only be spent on AMAs, for example, and that passed. When is the proper time, if it would want to make a restriction on an appropriation, when would be the proper time to bring that forward?
I would argue there are two things. One is as you are making your motions, and the second is once we have a complete package, we can still discuss any restrictions we want to place or guidance we want to place on any particular allocation that we have before we take a vote on the final package.
And could we also do that when we finalize the bill language and write the, you know, the language comes out? That would be, that was the time I think we did it last time.
I believe because the next step is the accomplishment plan, we need to provide the guidance now so that it occurs in the accomplishment plan if there's a restriction that we want to place, that it is reflected in the accomplishment plan instead of getting an accomplishment plan that then requires us to amend that plan. So we really need to do it today.
Okay.
We can do it later, but we need to do it today.
I think they have the math nearly resolved, but I know the one that we're going to get flack because the same people took the same flack last year on the other tribal project. So I will take a moment while I still have the floor to talk about the White Earth Nation project. All of the land that they're looking at purchasing with their project is looking at only $1,000 per acre. We can't get anything in the state of Minnesota for $1,000 per acre. This is probably the most cost-effective acquisition we'll ever do. Secondly, all of that land is currently closed to public hunting. Nothing is available there. People can't get on that land, and this project will open it up to both tribal and non-tribal members. I know I'm going to hear about wolf hunting again this year, but the same issue was talked about last year, and it was resolved then. Tribal ordinances are still laws recognized both in the state of Minnesota and at the federal level, and a tribal ordinance prohibiting wolf hunting on tribally owned land is still a law. And under the constitutional amendment, the acquisition only needs to be open to public hunting unless otherwise prescribed by law. So the wolf issue is here and done. And finally, I know there were questions when the presenters brought this forth last month about what if the DNR owned it instead. The DNR has had absolutely no interest in the property. The grant requesters have followed up with the DNR, and the DNR doesn't want to deal with it. And it's also a little late in the game to bring in a new partner on a grant. So there's some arguments for why the White Earth Nation project is a good one. I know I'm going to hear the same crap I heard last year. No offense. Oh, actually, yes, it wasn't intended. So, and I'd be perfectly happy to let the three pieces be split out.
Okay, we've got a clarification on the amount. The amount that we each have is 1,622. And the reason for that is we always round down so that we never have two, so we have round numbers and we don't overspend. So, Sue, would you take 2,000 out of your 566 to Shovel Rock River and make it 564?
Certainly.
Which I think will give you the right amount.
Yes.
So your motion is for 20,000 for contract management, 564,000 for Shell Rock River watershed habitat, and 1,038,000 for protecting forest, wildlife habitat, and wildlife river watershed. Okay, and I've heard a request for division. What order would you like to take those in?
We will take the controversial one first.
All right.
Just later, please.
Okay. Comments?
I think the speaker of the motion may have addressed this from outside, but here we're talking about who gets the money rather than what the money is being spent. And this is, we went through this last year. I'm going to say it again. This fund does not have an asterisk in the Constitution that says no Native Americans need apply.
Okay. Other comments? So we have a divided motion, the first piece of which is the FA02 for 1,038,000. All in favor of the motion as stated, since I'm seeing no other comments, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries. What order would you like to do the next one?
The 20,000.
Any discussion on the 20,000? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. The last one is HRE06 for $564,000 for Shell Rush River. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Rick.
Move on to the right.
Clockwise.
He's next on the clock.
Seriously? You didn't say to the right?
Yes, I said clockwise.
I'll take counterclockwise.
Didn't I say clockwise?
Yes.
Okay.
Good.
You can pass.
I thought it was.
I will do 1.5 to the Minnesota Buffer to Wildlife PA07. And the remainder to HRE07. Make my comments. With Noah Stock.
Sorry. What was the second one?
122,000 to HRE07.
Which one is that? I'm sorry.
Second from the bottom.
Yeah, second from the bottom. Okay. Thank you.
Let's call for division on that.
Got to ask for division on that. Which would you like to take first?
The buffer.
Okay. Any discussion? The motion is for $1.5 million for PA07, Minnesota Buffers for Wildlife and Water. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. The next is for HRE07, Lake Nokomis Integrated Habitat Enhancements. Discussion? I'd like to ask the question of you. As I read this, there are really two elements. One is a habitat of the shoreline, and the other is a fisheries component. The fisheries component seemed cloudy to me. The shoreline seemed like you knew what you were getting, and it made more sense just to me. Is there any chance you consider allocating specifically to the shoreline versus the entire project?
That was when I mentioned low stocking, I didn't even measure the portion of it, so the shoreline restoration.
I'm very sorry, I was listening and didn't hear that. So this is a motion for the 150 for the shoreline portion of this project.
122.
I'm sorry. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. Elizabeth?
I would like to give $200,000 to the legacy program for the Metro so that those numbers are the same for both Outstate and Metro.
So you want to give
$200,000? $300,000 would make them both the same.
I'm sorry.
Yes.
Is not keeping up with it.
That's okay. And then I would like to give the remainder to the Mississippi Headwaters Habitat Partnership. That's FA09.
Okay. FA09. For $1,322,000. Paul?
Yes.
James? Okay, we had a request for revision on this. Which would you like to state first?
Let's take the mental one first.
Okay. Discussion on the Metro Conservation Partners Legacy Grant Program, CPL 2, for $300,000. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. Then for FA09 for $1,322,000, Mississippi Headwaters Habitat Partnership. Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Let me do that again because I didn't hear much. All in favor of this request for 1.322, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Division.
Raise your hand, and all in favor, signify by saying, or signify by raising your hand, please. Raise your hand so that we can count. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Okay? Opposed?
Are you ready? 6 is more than 1.
Try that.
You still wouldn't have won, even if we counted.
Somebody got to help me.
Motion passes. Benny?
$1.622 million for PA07.
Right. No division with this one?
Yeah, I asked for division. I'll do PA07 first.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Scott?
Whatever the number is divided by 3, one third to accelerating the waterfall production area, one third to the DU Shallow Lakes program, and one third to accelerating the WMA program.
Can you help us out and just tell us what the numbers are?
Oh, okay. I'm sorry, can you do that?
470-470-408.
WA01, WA02, and PA02. Prairie is by far and away the most endangered ecosystem in Minnesota today, by a long way.
So if it's around 540 each, that number will be corrected.
Very good.
To WA01. WA02. And PA02.
Correct.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Jim?
Do you need help?
I'm going to give $340,000 to WA02. Ducks Unlimited. With the stipulation that all the land purchased in that appropriation can only be restored to wetlands and native vegetation.
And that is 340.
340. And the remainder I'll give to PA03 for recovery project.
Okay. Discussion?
The restriction you stated on your piece, is that it?
No, on all.
Well, I need a little more on that then.
What do you need?
Why are you saying that, and what are they doing that you didn't like?
I just want to make sure that, that all the land that's acquired with that is only restored and maintained in wetlands and native vegetation.
Is the DU guy here? I want to make sure that's not a problem.
Yes.
The DU guy is Mr. Schneider.
Or John.
Good afternoon. John Schneider from Ducks Unlimited.
Please answer the question about native prairie and what climate is
native.
Vegetation.
Our intent is to apply, as I testified earlier in September, our intent is to buy primarily cropland and towards the grass and wetlands. So they have to or whatever. It appears to be consistent with our intent.
Any other questions? I think it's a good clarification. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? I'm going to ask for a pass because I can't keep track of this and calculate what to do at the same moment, if that's all right. Is that okay with everyone? Thank you. This is, and then I'll take a couple minutes when we're done and get my thoughts around it. Bob?
CPL 1,500,000. HRE 02, 680,000. FA 06. Is one of those that didn't get
442,000. Okay.
What was his first one?
That's the partner's plan. CPL 1.
I would ask for division, please.
Okay. Which would you like to take first?
I'll take the CPL 1.
Okay. So the motion is to add 500,000 to the Conservation Partners Legacy Grant Program Phase 4, Phase 7. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. The second one was HRE 02. Lake Bemidji, thank you. Lake Bemidji South Shore Restoration for $680,000. That would bring the total up to what they've requested, correct?
Right.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? All right, and the last one was?
FA06.
FA06. Cass County protect, acquire key forest lands in Cass County for $442,000. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
Can I get a show of hands? All in favor? So there's 5 in favor. Opposed?
I'll do that. That's one tax on ground, isn't it?
Yes.
I'm going in favor.
6. Opposed? Raise your hands, please. 1, 2, 3, 4. Motion carries. All right, Ron.
Bob took mine.
I will finish off the Nokomis shoreline improvement, $200,000 for, is that HRE 07?
Yeah.
And that was stipulated that that is for the shoreline part of the project and not the fish docking.
So that would be how much again?
$200,000.
$200,000, which would bring it to 1 to 322 total, but I think they had asked for 470 for the shoreline.
Yeah, and Representative Hansen added some too.
He did
122. He did
122. And I'm doing 200. So
which would bring it to 3.
Half and half.
What I'm, the only reason I'm asking is you said to complete the shoreline request was 470,000, the 122 and the 200,000 gets to 322, which is 470, which is what would complete the shoreline. So I'm asking you if you're clear on what you're asking for.
Yes. I didn't have that figure in front of me, the shoreline. But
okay.
Yeah, that's fine. They can
only clarify.
Right. They're good to get them started. I didn't see buying fish from and we raised millions of them. The balance I would put to PA07 above.
Balance would be 1.422. Okay. What?
What balance, Mr. Ware?
I'm sorry, yeah. PA07, Minnesota Buffers for Wildlife and Water, Phase 5.
Requested 744,300, and we now have them funded at 886.
How is that possible?
No, that's not right.
No.
It should be 122 plus 200.
Yeah.
New.
No, my 5, 6, and 4 was on HRE06.
How would we get that out?
Almost.
What?
Scorekeeper data before we confuse the issue anymore. That's okay.
I want to congratulate them for keeping up as long as they did.
Your chair is not doing particularly well.
And Mr. Chair, we probably should provide the aspirin to the Shellrock people up there. Shock on their face when they saw that. Quite stunning.
I couldn't leave that to you for recognizing it. Well, I think we can take the vote on this. All in favor of Ron's motion?
Aye.
Saying aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. So, Jane, we're giving you a chance to think for a second while staff gets it up.
Try not to do that. That's a big task. Scary.
I want to remind the members that we have the tape is working, and we have good notes, and the notes do work. So, we can make sure that the final recommendation reflects what was voted on and facts without any problems.
You're ready. Okay. Jane.
Okay. 400,000 to FA04, Southeast Minnesota Protection and Restoration Phase 3. 422,000 to PA02, WMAs, $400,000 to PA03, Prairie Recovery Project Phase 6, and $400,000 to FA05, Pineland Sands, and that's it.
Okay.
Pardon?
The last one.
FA05, $400,000.
So, very slow.
I have three at 400 and one at 422, right? That's right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the first 400 goes to FA04. 422 goes to PA02. 400 goes to PA03. And 400,000 goes to FA05. That's the wildlife, WMA's Pheasants Forever. PA02.
Okay. Everyone clear on this? Any discussion? All in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Give the chair a moment. If you would. Chair would recommend HRE 01 Minnesota Trout Unlimited Cold Water Fish Habitat $300,000. FA08 Critical Shoreland Habitat Protection Project $400,000. HA02 Metro Big Rivers Partnership $400,000. FRE01 Southeast Forest Habitat Enhancement $400,000 in the middle of the page. And $122,000 to HRE07 Lake Nokomis Integrated Habitat for the shoreland portion. $122,000. Any discussion?
Please divide it.
All right. I'll just take them top to bottom. Minnesota Trout Unlimited, the motion is for $300,000. Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Critical Shoreland Habitat Protection Program, FA08 for $400,000. Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. HA02 Metro Big Rivers Partnership Phase 6, $400,000. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
All right. Motion carried. Southeast Forest Habitat Enhancement, for $400,000. Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Lake Nokomis Integrated Habitat Enhancements for $122,000.
Can I ask a question? Excuse me, Mr. Chair, just a clarification. Did Ron's 200 pass? Is it, is it at 322 currently before yours?
Yes.
Yes.
And what was the clarification? Are we over? Are we now stocking fish?
No.
No, no.
Horse this is all for shoreline habitat. Okay. Any other discussion?
Yeah. It was $470,000 for the shoreline.
That was what was in their proposal.
And this would bring it at $444,000?
Yes.
Thank you.
Jane? This should be a CPL Metro project. I object to it on that basis, in addition to it being very poor habitat overall.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carries. So I think we have 5,000 left over. We're going to leave that as a round number.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a motion that we have a reciprocity agreement between the Metro Partners Legacy Grant Program and the statewide Partners Legacy Grant Program, and give the DNR and the administration of those programs, if after trying to allocate the money in the separate funds, if they're not able to allocate them and there's a need in the other fund, that those funds could be then spent on the other program. And reciprocity would be, I think there's naturally a reciprocity in the statewide plan, but I think it just sounds good if we say they would be in both directions. So basically, if the Metro didn't get enough grants, it could be used for the statewide. Maybe that's the way I should put it, because the statewide is eligible. But if the Metro doesn't get enough, I would like to see it be able to be spent statewide. And I actually thought that was in last year's bill, and it wasn't.
So you're, just to clarify, because you said two things. One was reciprocity. One was if the Metro program doesn't get enough applications and awards, the money would be used in the statewide program.
And Mr. Chair, thank you for the clarification. That's what I mean.
Okay.
And that's the only thing I mean.
All right.
That's another way to say it.
Thank you. Scott?
And then is there any language that we can add to that that says if you're a Metro project that you apply to the Metro CPL? If you're an outstate project, you apply to the outstate so that we don't have, because the outstate can only apply to the outstate portion, but the Metro could apply for the Metro and the outstate portion. Okay, should we say that we'll give them reciprocity, but they have to apply within their specified boundaries initially, and then let the reciprocity take place at a later date?
So just let me, and I'll get to you, Jim.
Well, I just want
to go ahead.
I mean, legally, Representative McNamara, if the Metro CPL says it can only be spent in the Metro area, can we do it that way?
We're making a recommendation to the legislature what the law is going to say, and I'm recommending from this body that we put in legislation what I thought was in last year, that actually if the Metro grants don't spend it all, that money can be allocated statewide. And then it would be in rider language, they would state that with the Metro Grant Program. They probably would draft some language if in the second round or third round they're not met, then the statewide grants that were unmet needs could then be allocated. I wasn't giving them the specifics. The rider language will come back probably to us at a later meeting.
Go ahead.
In the CPL, Metro CPL, it says that money can only be spent in the Metro area or Metro areas. So how do you get around that? That's what I don't understand. If there's money left over there, then you're going outside the Metro area.
Right. You'll like what I'm doing.
Well, I'm sure I will. I'm just curious how you're going to do it.
Jim, well, I think what happened is there would be a clause in the appropriation law for the metro money that, say, in 18 months, there's an uncommitted balance in the grant budget that money would be available for, and then you cite the chapter and verse section that it's available for, which would be the CPL 1 program.
Rick?
When we had the DNR come here and explain, you said that they were in the middle of the process, and I think between now and the next meeting, I'm supportive of that. I'd like to hear from DNR, not today, but maybe before the next meeting, just what the demand has been, because we're in the first year, so we're making the decision. We get to the final on facts, so we can see what the demand is, because we could be debating something that may be moved if the demand continues to be strong. But I understand the maker of the motion, and I'd like to just have the honor give us some data tonight, right now.
You know, Mr. Chair, to simplify the process today, how about if I withdraw my motion and leave it open that we discuss it when DNR presents the status of those, with the idea that I was concerned that it's going to be unmet, and what I want that CPL grant program, the need is statewide. So I'll just remove my motion at this time with the idea that it be discussed in a later meeting.
So at our next meeting, we'll have the DNR give us a sense of what they think the program's demand will be for both sides, and if this amount of money can be spent, and then decide if we want to do it.
Mr. Chair, I think that's a real good idea to put an agenda item on, which is an update on the CPL 1 and CPL 2 programs. We haven't done that in a while, and I think it's probably time to take a look at the program manager and get a hold of the program.
Okay. Rick?
And then the same vein, we talked at one of your other meetings about the rider language that we had with grading and grazing on the lands, and maybe the best way to deal with that is to have a report and have that discussion too, so we can be fully informed when we make the policy. I just would prefer that we put that in the statute rather than every appropriation, but I think we should hear from on how implementation is done.
Okay, staff will organize a presentation on that. The next meeting will be November 13th. Jenny?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would also ask staff to present proposed rider language, working with Mr. Knopf and Ms. Taylor, that no NGOs receive compensation in excess of their cost and overhead. And basically, this would be at the TPL model of the donations back to them, that they only be able to be reimbursed, no different than a state agency can, for actual cost incurred. And staff would come back with some proposed language that would reach for that. I think we could discuss it on the 13th.
Okay.
And all I would say is that any donations received back that exceed the actual cost incurred would be returned back to the state of Minnesota and put in that, whatever the time period is for the 5-year grant period or whatever it is, so we get a little bit back time so they don't get it back right after.
So we will ask staff to bring some language for discussion and ask TPL to be here to respond to that at the time. Is that fair?
And I like the idea that it's after November 4th.
Good. Yeah. Some of us are concerned about that.
Mr. Chair, one more. I would like staff to clarify with DNR on the status of the later Indian reservation proposal and clarify DNR's position on whether they're interested in acquiring that land as a WMA. We voted to do that project and do it through the later, and I'm not sure that there's a clear understanding if it is a possibility that be state-owned fee land. I personally, U.S. Fish and Wildlife or State of Minnesota, I'd rather see these funds used for those entities that buy for outside entities, including counties, local jurisdictions, and so I just would like to have that discussion again. I don't think it needs to be today. I support the project and voted for the project and voted for funding. But I'd like to have a good discussion of separate of the Grey Wolf. I think the management should be by the Native Americans in control on to the Grey Wolf. I 100%
support that. We will ask the White Earth Band and the DNR to come and talk about the issue in the next meeting. Any other, Brian?
I would like to suggest that in the next application form, Sue brought this up earlier, but it's been on my mind when I would go through these proposals, is if they set phase, I kind of understood that they could get by with less than what they're asking for because they can catch up with it down the road. But individual projects such as the Lake Bemidji drove me crazy that we were not going to give them the amount of money they needed to do the whole shoreline. So perhaps in the form, instead of us asking and remembering to ask or having the applicant remember to tell us, that on the form we would ask, you know, could this project be done piecemeal or does it have to be done all at once? And if you don't get the money, is that project lost? I mean, is it a dead-end deal? So that we would have some idea about, can we just pay for part of it, or does it have to be all or nothing? Now, I understand some applicants will say, oh, we need it all, but maybe they can justify it.
So what I would instruct staff to do is to bring suggested language to cover that to our discussion on the request for proposal for next year, so that we can discuss it then.
Language.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments?
Mr. Chair, the other point I wanted to make, if we do come back in our December meeting with a positive forecast, I think the one project, and I guess because we have to go short on the beginning of the list, the Camp Ripley project has a 300% match. And so I just hope that we consider it of that when we come back in December if there is money left over. And actually, for every dollar of this money, we get a 300% federal match.
If they file their reports.
Sometimes the paperwork is not really truthful of what the real situation is, especially if we're dealing with the federal government.
Mr. Chair, if I could just get a clarifying answer, and I think we asked this during the presentations, but now, since we've made allocations, I'd like to hear from if there's plans from potential recipients on planting corn or any other crops on either the restoration or the acquisition.
So you're asking that be included in the account?
Asking before the next meeting if they could just let us know if there's any plans, the imagined plan for planting corn or other crops with those acquisitions.
Because our next meeting is the accomplishment plan discussion, yep. So come in the accomplishment or with the accomplishment plan. So we have a request to ask that question. So the folks that we're allocating money for, so that we have the information and we can decide what we want to do with it, but we'll have the information.
We'll add that to the form for the accomplishment plan. So it stays with the project through its entire life.
Okay. Other requests, thoughts? So I think we're at the point of approving the package we've just gone through with all of the additions. We need 9 votes. So I would ask for all those voting in favor to signify by saying aye.
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 You know what? Don't we need a roll call?
If someone asks for a roll call, that's fine.
I thought we need a roll call.
I think we do, because it's in statute that we need 9 votes.
Okay, I was going to, if I heard more than one no, I was going to do it. But we'll do a roll call vote.
Could we just have her read the final numbers once we
Sure. For each project?
Yeah.
Okay. Amanda, will you read the... the final numbers for each project.
HRE 01, Minnesota Power Grid for water for habitat, which is phase 7, $1,890,000. HA 01, $4,540,000. 01, contract management, $150,000. 02, restoration evaluation, $100,000. CPL 1, $4,470,000. CPL 2, $3,970,000. FAO 4, $2,910,000. WAO 3, $1,600,000. PRE 01, $4,880,000. PA 04, $3,430,000. PA 05, $1,380,000. PA 01, $4,570,000. FA 08, $1,690,000. WA 01, $7,620,666. WA02, $9,040,669. WRE01, $2,730,000. PA06,
FA03, $1,550,000. FA04, $9,880,000. FA05, $2,188,000. FA09, $3,000,000. PA06, $442,000. FA07, $0. PA07, $4,544,000. PA09, $0.
HRE07, $444,000. And HA03, $0.
So I think the proper way to do this is to ask for a motion to approve this with the understanding that any number will be rounded down to the nearest thousand. We're not going to carry 667,000, that's how the math might work.
Round to the nearest 10,000.
Round to the nearest 10,000? Okay. Good. I would agree with you to that.
We make a motion to accept the slated project as described, rounded to the nearest 10,000.
That would be great. Down to the nearest
10,000.
All right. So, a roll call vote. Ask for. Sandy, are you doing the roll call vote? Or Amanda's doing the roll call vote? Go for it. Call the roll.
Starting with the top of the list.
That's
Bob,
just fine.
Bob Anderson.
Yes.
Jim Cox.
Yes.
Representative Rick Hansen.
Yes.
David Hartwell.
Yes.
Jane Kingston.
Yes.
Representative Benny McNamara.
Yes.
Sue Olson.
Yes.
Scott Braun.
Yes.
Ron Shara.
Yes.
Elizabeth Wilkins.
Yes.
That's 10 yeses and no noes. The motion passes. But thank you all for your hard work. Thank you for tolerating my a little confusion here. Yes, we have an opportunity for public comment. I'm not aware that anybody has asked to appear today. I'm not seeing anyone come down, so the meeting is adjourned. Thank you all.